Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, hello and welcome to our first program of 2014. Let's all hit the ground running in the new year. Remember that those simple little song lyrics from a few years back, "Don't Worry, Be Happy"? Well, when we stop to think about it, these words kind of tie a neat bow around all of our resolutions and bucket lists for the new year. Assuming you are of sound mind, rational, and law-abiding, which I assume all of you are, if you could just stop worrying and be happy over where you've been, over where you are today, and over where you're headed, accomplishment of most career, lifestyle, and relationship goals probably would soon follow. And let's make "Don't Worry, Be Happy" our mantra for the new year. Well, I can hear skeptics and naysayers out there hollering, "Easier said than done. Sounds great for you, but I have far too many things to worry about. Given my current circumstances, how in the world can I be happy? And I despise my present job and my marriage is on the rocks. Sure, I'll just smile and laugh my troubles away." Well, if you're unhappy and stressed out, our next guest affirms that you are far from alone. She cites an epidemic of anxiety and unhappiness that's gripping the world, and millions of people think that joy in life is a myth. Worse yet, that we're raising a generation of kids to follow in our footsteps as they more and more feel stressed, depressed, and distressed. And we all know the teen suicide rate is alarming and keeps climbing each year. But she goes on to counsel that you don't have to join in all this misery. You can brighten your own life and the lives of your kids as well. And fortunately for our little corner of the world, our guest is happiness facilitator Cindy Tevens, and she's one of the world's most joyful and contented individuals. And I don't know what experts measured that, but I can vouch that Cindy is a pretty happy person. And she asks, what if everything you learned about happiness was wrong? And her stated mission is to reverse the sadness trend and to help you achieve inner peace and happiness in 5 minutes or less a day. And that sounds pretty good to me. And Cindy is a life coach who has helped thousands to positively transform their lives from inside out. And she overcame her own intense sadness and found inner happiness and peace that have become her predominant states. And today she's a retreat and workshop leader, popular blogger, and she's authored several books, including her newest one, The Happiness Lie, What Generations Have Been Told That Makes You Unhappy. And hello, Cindy, and welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Thank you, Roy. That was wonderful. Couldn't have said it better myself.
And you sound happy, which is good.
Absolutely.
Well, you say the happiness lie keeps billions unhappy worldwide. What exactly is the happiness lie?
Okay. Well, the happiness lie is the belief that things, people, or events make you happy or unhappy.
Oh, yes. That's so true. You know, you can't determine everything that's going to happen in the world, but you can hopefully control how you react to what happens in the world.
Yes, yes. And it's this unconscious belief that we have inherited generation after generation, and we're not even aware of it most of the time.
Yeah.
Yet, you know, we speak this way. We say, "He hurt me," or "It stresses me." And
yeah.
It's not true. It's just not true.
Yeah, that's right. Well, briefly give us your history. You say you were less than a happy person, and you suffered a devastating family tragedy, and that inspired you to launch your happiness movement. But I guess happiness didn't just occur overnight. How did your transformation occur?
Yes, I wasn't always like this. I used to believe in the happiness lie as well. And some years ago, my father believed in a happiness lie, and he suffered so severely that he became depressed. And he became so depressed that he actually committed suicide.
Oh, that's awful.
So it was a pivotal event for me in my life, because I saw how every piece of his life made his life. I saw all the family members come around and each give a little perspective of what they saw of him.
Yeah.
And I promised him, you know, the day he passed away, that it would not be for nothing. Meaning,
yeah,
you know,
that's
his
so
suffering.
Important that anyone's life that is taken away, that it's not just for nothing. That
yes.
I know our daughter was killed when she was piloting her plane, and that inspired me a lot, and what I've done since then. But, bad things can inspire good things, I think.
Absolutely, they definitely can, and this really launched me on a quest to find an end to suffering.
Yeah.
And it happened.
But it didn't happen right away. Didn't you say like 6 years later you had an instantaneous transformation or something that occurred much later?
Yes. Yes, it wasn't related to my father's suicide directly, but he started me on this quest. So I started, you know, reaching out and looking and learning and reading everything I could get my hands on, but nothing satisfied.
Huh.
It was right in the middle of my own intense, unrelated suffering that it happened. And it did largely happen in a moment, in an instant.
Did it just like come like a bolt of lightning into your head?
Well, I had gone through intense weeks of suffering, debilitating on the bed, crying, because I had been denied what I thought I needed to have. I'd been denied, you know, the love of another, and that's probably, you know, the stuff of our stories and songs and the stuff
sure
of a lot. Yeah, a lot of our suffering is around that. But actually, all of our suffering is about things we think we need to have.
Yeah.
And in that moment, I stopped. I stopped because I did two things. I decided no more pain, zero tolerance. And suicide was out of the question, even though I thought about it. You know, I'd promised Dad. So
if I
did the same thing,
that wouldn't
work. No. So, and the second thing was, I refused to blame another person.
Yeah, that's good.
I refused to blame the outside. You know, that's our typical response is, you know, he hurt me, she hurt me, or
it
stresses
so easy.
Me.
It's so much easier on your personal psyche if you can blame somebody else for your problems.
Yeah, but it's never really complete and pure, is it? It always
no, it doesn't solve anything, obviously. But,
no. And it leaves a bad taste, and I didn't want that. I wanted just pure love.
Yeah.
And so I didn't know what to do because we're not taught anything else. Basically, we're taught to blame others, right? Because somebody else, you know, does it too, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So I didn't do anything. And there was this moment where I just stopped. And in that moment, I heard or knew that you can give yourself whatever you want.
Yeah.
And then I went back into the suffering. But I hadn't missed it. And I thought, well, if that were true, then it must be inside. It can't be outside.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. And I looked for it, and there it was.
Huh.
I looked for the love, the dignity, the acceptance, everything that I thought I didn't have. I looked for the opposite. I looked for what I did want.
Huh.
And I found it all. And all of the energy that was being used to suffer, it was intense. It flipped over.
That's true. The energy's still there. Why not
put
it to good purpose, right?
Exactly. And it just flipped right over into this amazing love, joy, peace. It was mind-blowing.
Oh, it would be.
Mind-blowing. And then it flipped back again. When I say it flipped, I didn't know what was happening at the time, but I learned later, you know.
Yeah.
I learned later that I had flipped my attention back onto what I didn't want.
Yeah.
Because mind, a thought would arise like, well, you can't feel good because A, B, C, D has happened.
Yeah, that raises an interesting point when, you know, most of us are read or at least heard of Norman Vincent Peale's Power of Positive Thinking and all these updated versions. I guess The Secret is a lot like that, which everyone reads. But there is a difference between happiness and positive thinking, and why, in fact, does positive thinking actually make people miserable?
Yes, because when you feel bad, bad thoughts come to you easily and effortlessly. And when you feel good, good thoughts come to you easily and effortlessly.
But you're saying you can't force positive thinking to come in.
Yeah. Has anybody actually ever tried to force a good thought on a bad feeling?
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's excruciating.
Yeah.
And you feel like a fraud.
Yeah.
You know, it just doesn't fit.
Yeah, I guess that's the mistake people make when they try to be happy. You know, when you wake up this morning and you've been miserable, I'm going to be happy today.
That's right. No matter what.
Or when you've been having some arguments with your teenage son or daughter and you say, they're not going to get me down today.
Oh, right, right, right. I'll be angry instead. Yeah. So what I do is I show people how to feel good first.
Yeah.
And when you feel good, good thoughts come to you easily, you know, and it's just natural.
Yeah, I see. Well, what are three innate powers that we're born with that can create peace and joy that most of us don't even know we have?
Yeah. Yes. This is why it took me some time to discover what it was because I didn't know.
Yeah.
And basically, the first power is your power of awareness.
Oh,
and
I see.
There's nothing you can do for it. You can't stop it. You can't turn it off. But you can notice how easy it is to hear. Like, how much effort does it take to hear?
Very good point.
Right? And the second power is your power of attention.
Yeah.
Now, your power of attention, like your breathing, you can take conscious control of. But also like your breathing, if you don't take conscious control of it, it will just go all over.
Yeah.
It just wanders, right?
Yeah.
And it can wander onto a bad feeling thought.
Yeah.
Before you know it, and you're feeling bad, and you're believing it. So I show people how to use the power of attention instead of having the power of attention use them.
Yeah, that's a good point. In other words, you've got the power of awareness, but then you can choose which thing you're aware of you're paying attention to, I guess.
Exactly, exactly. Like, for instance, are you feeling your left foot right now?
No, actually, I was just feeling my right foot. Now that you mentioned that, I'm feeling I can feel my left foot, I guess.
Yes, it didn't stop feeling right, so that awareness is always available.
Yeah.
But the reason we're not aware of our body a lot of the time is because we have focused our attention onto either just one part, like you did, you were feeling a certain foot, or onto somebody else's thoughts.
Yeah.
Words that they're expressing, or your own inner thoughts.
Yeah.
And then you can actually eliminate things in the rest of your experience that are still there. They're available to you in awareness, but because you've contracted your power of attention, that's why we call a blind rage a blind rage.
Yeah.
When you put all of your power of attention onto one bad feeling thought, you become blind, deaf, and ignorant to other things and people and events that are going on around you. You become literally blind.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, what's that third power? You mentioned awareness and attention. What's the third innate power we have?
Your power of interest. What are most interested in.
Huh.
And if you're most interested in a problem or a bad feeling thought, then that's what you're going to get.
Good point.
If you're most interested in a good feeling thought, that's what you're going to get. You see, I decided no more pain, zero tolerance, right? And what did that mean? That means I had to put my attention on something that felt good instead of something that felt bad.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've got some time. Give us some tools we can use at middle age, heck, at any age, that we need to feel good in the next 5 minutes.
Okay. All right. So now you've experienced your power of attention on one foot, moving to the other foot, right?
Yeah.
Can you feel the top of your head?
Yeah, I just did, now that you mention it.
Okay, great. Now, did you notice the movement from your foot to your head?
A little bit.
Okay, that's your power of attention. It can move around.
Yeah.
You can direct it, right? Okay.
Yeah.
So now, put your attention into your feet, into the top of your head.
Okay.
Take in your peripheral vision. And notice your breath moving in and out. And just do that for a few breaths.
doing it.
How does that feel?
Feels relaxing. Feels good, actually.
Yes. Feels good. Feels relaxing. What's absent?
Thoughts of all the problems and the world's problems.
Yeah.
Debts we have and everything else.
Yes, all gone.
Yeah.
How quick was that?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
And if you stay there, you'll become calmer.
Yeah.
You'll find you're relaxing, you're releasing, you're breathing deeply. And the reason there's no thoughts there is because you're taking your power of attention away from the stream of thinking.
Yeah, very good. Very good. You know, that's when people are so stressed out, they're not really paying attention to their breathing or anything else. They're just constantly overwhelmed by thoughts that are coming in of bad things that are going to happen that probably won't.
Exactly. They are in their head. All of their energy, their power of attention is fully in the stream of thinking, which is really keeping your body hostage.
Yeah.
Because you'll stop breathing. You will tighten up and tense up and contort your body, and you're not even aware of it.
Yeah, that's very true. I know. You know, when I've been stressed out, let's say a long drive or something, and there's always one traffic and stuff, it can be tense, and you get so wrapped up in that, and when you're through the drive, you only then realize just how tense you've been, and
exactly.
How your whole body is tensed up.
Yes.
And, of course, that's true when you're worried about something, too.
Absolutely. So doing this, putting your attention into all your senses, including noticing your breath, I call coming to your senses. So you can come to your senses anytime.
Yeah. Yeah, and that would be what you do for 5 minutes to overcome, say, a bout of stress or worry or something that you're trying.
That's the first step.
Yeah.
So first step is to realize, okay, this feels bad. Come to your senses. And then ask yourself, what do you want instead?
What was that again, the last one?
Ask yourself, what do I want instead? What do I want? So instead of, before maybe you were putting your thoughts on how noisy the kids are.
Yeah.
Or the grandkids are.
Yeah.
then you can come to your senses. And they can still be making noise.
Yeah.
You can come to your senses, notice your breath moving in and out, and then ask yourself, what do you want instead of it being stressful?
Yeah.
You might notice, it's joyful.
Yeah, it's joyful. The noise, hearing the little kids experiencing life. It all depends on your perspective.
Yeah. And so now you start to have what I call a feel-good fest.
Oh, that's great.
Feel good in your body. Mm-hmm.
Well, here's the $64,000 question. Let's say that we get feeling real good in the moment. How do we then extend our euphoria so that we make happiness our permanent lifestyle?
Yes. Make it a habit when you notice a bad feeling to use suffering for the only thing it's good for, to point you toward joy.
That's a good point.
Make this your new habit. And the thing is, the reason you're feeling bad in the first place is because there's an attachment. There's something you're believing to be true, like it shouldn't be this way or this shouldn't have happened.
Yeah,
and that is,
my ex-partner in business screwed me or something, and that's why I'm so unhappy today. These past things that we keep dwelling on.
Yes, the past doesn't exist.
No.
You notice that then you're at peace.
Yeah.
Right now. Even if you think about something from the past, when are you doing it? Now, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So, is this the best use of your now?
The only thing I always tell people to think the past about is how they can use something that they learned in the past as a reference to make things better in the future. But beating yourself over the head for something you did in the past is so utterly ridiculous. Even if you decide that everything and a number of big decisions you made in the past were wrong, you can take a positive outlook toward it because you know now why you did it. Or once you explore that, and you won't make the same mistake again. And if most of your decisions in the past were good ones, you can be confident you'll make good ones in the present and future. So that's
yes. And like you say, if you notice the benefits you know, or the value you got out of it, then maybe it wasn't an error.
Yeah, that's right.
After all, it was a learning experience.
Yeah, you have to look at yourself as you were back then, what you knew back then. And,
exactly.
And yes. Obviously you know more now. That's what experience is all about, especially for those of us in middle age and beyond.
That's right.
Well, let's turn from ourselves briefly to our offspring, and particularly our preteen or teenage sons or daughters. Do you have a formula that helps to banish the blues, rage, drug use, destructive behavior in young people? First of all, how do you get them to listen to mom or dad? And how do we open their eyes to the joy of living what you've just described for us here? But,
yeah, the best way is to be the example of it.
Yeah, that's always
you know?
True.
I was with my nephew some time ago, and somebody said, oh, it's a miserable day out. And I said, it's not miserable, it's just wet.
Yeah, that's
<You know>?
True. That's a
There's
good
a
distinction
huge difference.
There.
Yeah. And so it's in the way we speak, the way we walk, the way we talk, looking at how what things we believe that we are passing down, unconsciously passing down to the next generation that we don't need to.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's the saddest thing is, I know it's a partial contributor at least, there are all these smartphones and iPads and social media. You know, whenever you see a kid, I saw a girl waiting for the school bus the other day, and she's holding her smartphone in her hand, and she didn't look very happy. I think you know, so much of the time people are so busy with their heads and their phones that they aren't paying attention to what's going on around them and aren't taking time to experience the joy that's out there.
Yeah, the joy is always available 24/7, and what causes us unhappiness is not things, people, or events. We don't want things, people, or events. We want the feeling we mistake them for.
Yeah, that's true.
So when you're absorbed in a thought about something, that's what hurts, not the thing itself.
Yeah, I love that. Like one time years ago, I think it was the first time I had a real romantic attachment to a young lady. And after we broke up some time ago, I realized that I really wasn't that attracted to the person. She didn't have any great attraction to me, but I was in love with love, just that that feeling that it sent into me, that you know, beyond myself, attaching to somebody else, and it's so much about that. But
so that's a big realization that it wasn't the person that gave you the joy.
She was okay, and I thought I was that great either, who knows.
It's the idea that we have, oh, someone's paying attention to me, oh, I'm important, oh, I'm lovable. You give that to yourself. Nobody gives that to you.
No, that's right. And really, to love somebody else, you really have to love yourself. Because
exactly.
If you don't have any self-confidence or real love and concern for yourself, you're not going to be a good partner to anybody else.
And if you think that your happiness comes from your partner, you're going to put expectations on them. You're going to have needs, and you're going to end up being unhappy, and so is your partner.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little about your brand new book, The Happiness Lie. Where can somebody buy that, and what's
happiness,
it all about?
The Happiness Lie is now available on Amazon.com. Yes. And, you can order it directly from them.
Yeah.
And it shows people how to be happy for life without controlling thoughts or healing the past.
Well, that's great. And you have a website, thehappinesslie.com, that I went to, and you have a happiness ratio quiz on there, which I urge people to take because it's free. And I took that this morning and came up, I'm so close to freedom. And it says it's a quite physically healthy ratio, what I scored. And I still have remnants of happiness lie in my life and still more joy to unleash. And that's right where I would expect to be because, quite frankly, I'm really happy about doing this program and the books I wrote and the other things I'm doing, but I know now and then I still go back to that blaming somebody else or losing my cool and in traffic and other things that I don't preach on this program. So I'm sure I have work to do like everyone else. And you also have a membership website. Tell us a little about that.
I do, theinneralcove.com. That is a community where you can discover freedom, joy, and peace within. And it's an audio-video program that you can take for 4 weeks. And it includes telephone coaching calls with me once a week on there.
Oh, that's great. And you also have a monthly newsletter or something that people receive on that? So it's kind of an on-giving. It keeps giving and giving.
Yes, there's a lot. There's a lot to be got from the membership site for sure, including support, because one of the biggest things when you start to do this practice to change your life from the inside out is that everybody else around you believes the happiness lie. Everybody else walks and talks as if it's true, you know?
Yeah, it's so great to have a support group whenever you're trying to change your life. It's very tough to do alone.
Yes. So, and other people can hear the happiness lies that you speak when you don't, and that's a benefit there.
Well, I certainly urge you to explore Cindy's website and her book, and maybe we can all learn that don't worry, be happy is possible for you in the new year and for the rest of your life. And what's that book again and the website? It's The Happiness Lie.
The Happiness Lie.
And you can find that on Amazon as well by Cindy Teevens, T-E-E-V-E-N-S is your last name.
Yes. So I encourage and urge people to seek joy, not reasons for your pain, because that just supports the pain.
That's true.
Not the whys. I say the whys are where the suffering lies. So instead, seek joy.
And maybe one day you'll have that experience that Cindy had in the woods. What, you suddenly just lie down and start laughing?
Yes. I went around for about 9 months in joy, giving myself whatever I wanted because I can.
Yeah.
And didn't mean everything around me was perfect, you know.
No, of course not.
But it didn't matter.
Yeah.
And because I gave myself everything that I wanted, there was nothing that I wanted, and this tremendous peace and equanimity settled in. And when I went out for a walk in the woods, I had nothing of interest left in this world to you know, be interested in, to go for, so to speak. I didn't want a change in job or relationship or career or family, nothing.
Yeah.
And I was only interested in knowing what this whole world is about, this universe. You know, where did we come from? Why are we here? All those childhood questions arose again. You know, my whole interest was thrown back into that.
It's so great when you can get outside yourself and really think about things like that rather than pondering, you know, where do I fit or how do I measure up?
Kind of all those unimportant things.
It should be unimportant, but so much takes so much of our time and our worry. Well, thank
we
you
can.
So much, Cindy, for joining us here today. And to Cindy and all of you, a most joyous new year. And best
Happy
of success in the sale of your new book and everything on your venture, because we want everyone to be happy, and maybe that'll change the world.
Absolutely will. Thank you so much, Roy.
Bye-bye. Well, as most of us at middle age are well aware, very few get through an entire career without one or more major setbacks along the way. And there are two major types. Type one is a self-inflicted personal workplace disaster. You screwed up badly and no one else shares the blame. You probably embarrassed yourself and potentially harmed the company. Say you may have lost a major account by not paying attention to details. You mistakenly thought that account was on automatic pilot and you're a marketing rep. And you missed a deadline or on your part for a critical report intended for the board of directors. You embarrassed your boss, yourself, and fellow employees. Or here's the worst of all. This one makes me chuckle. You hit the dreaded reply all button and sent a scathing profanity-laced email about your boss that was intended for your best friend, but it went to everyone in the company, including the CEO and the board of directors. You may not have been fired yet, at least not yet, but you feel like you're hanging on by a thread, and you deserve all the blame. Now, there's a second type of screw-up, and that's a shared workplace screw-up. You alone are not responsible for subpar performance. Your colleagues messed up also. Maybe they did most of the mess-up. But you feel like you're receiving an unfair share of the blame. Say you're a marketing rep and one of your primary customers has expressed dissatisfaction with your company's service in general, and one of the major complaints is late deliveries, but you can't control the production department. Maybe you're assigned to an IS project task force, and the project is way behind schedule, over budget, and the output to date stinks, but the fellow team members don't seem to give a damn. They're just going their way and taking it lightly. Or maybe you have several significant errors have surfaced in your department's latest quarterly report, and you were only responsible for a small part of it, and the errors were not yours. And because we're human, every now and then you and I will make potential career-breaking mistakes or be part of a team that drastically misses the mark. And the question for the new year is, how best can we recover? And our next guest, Monica Davis, is here to help answer that question. She's a number one Amazon best-selling author, founder and publisher of Exceptional People magazine, a premier self-improvement and professional development publication. She's an entrepreneur and former talk show host and motivational speaker, and she's featured in USA Today, Marketplace, and People, and has been called the next Oprah. She routinely interacts with some of today's top business leaders, and she's committed to helping others overcome setbacks and successfully achieve business and life goals. And hello, Monica, and welcome. It's indeed an honor to have you here on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it, and I'm glad to be on your show.
Well, let's start by what are some, say, the top five setbacks that men and women experience on the job? If you could give us a few examples.
Well, I think some of the setbacks are some that you actually did mention.
Yeah.
Basically, the fact that, you know, if you're working on a team, for example, and some things occur that the customer is not happy with, and it may not be your fault directly, but if you are a part of the team that implemented this particular project, then that can be a major setback for you, because now you are seen as either non-productive or you don't produce quality work.
Yeah.
And so that can cause a lot of strain between employees as well as between employee and management. And
yeah.
So there are several different setbacks that can occur on the job, and I think that sometimes can be a huge problem for individuals or for employees. And so, you know, not only that, but I mean, just, you know, working with your team members, there are team members who don't really work, you know, up to par. They sort of slack, and they allow, you know, someone else to do the work for them. And then when it comes time to pull everything together, all of the parts that make up this particular project, then the one person that has not been doing their job the way they should be doing it, it really causes some issue and, again, some strain and animosity between employees or the team members, because
yes,
you have a few slackers. And so there are so many different things that can occur on a job that can cause so many setbacks.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, let's say it's just you this time that screwed up, and you screwed up big time, and it's clearly your fault. You got distracted, and you're not going to finish the report on time. What's the first thing you should do?
Well, if I were to find myself in that position, then I think the first thing I would do, of course, is to apologize not only to the team, but of course to management, and if possible, personally to the customer. I think when you do that, it shows that you care about the customer, and it is not something that you ordinarily would do. But you know, sometimes it does happen. Sometimes you don't catch everything, and there are just times when some things will get by you and you miss something, and it could be that one important thing that you truly needed to really make the project shine. And so I think the first thing to do really is to apologize, and then from that point on, of course, is to make sure that from that point on that you check to make sure that everything is in order and that you have all of the information that you need in order to follow through correctly.
Yeah, now if I, let's say I discovered an obscure mistake in a report that I'd done, and it's not certain that it would be caught by anybody, but it's fairly important. I should probably take the initiative right away before my boss or the customer discovers the error and apologize and correct it, I presume, rather than hope that it gets by.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I believe that it's always important to do your best work. And so that means doing your best work, which means if you find an error or something that is not correct, then you should take it upon yourself to go ahead and correct it, even though it may slip by. But I think if you're true to your work and you have very high work ethics, then you will go ahead and correct it.
Yeah, and showing the high ethics is one of the most important things, certainly long-term in business. You may get a buy without being totally ethical a few times, but over the long haul, you're not going to get away with it. Well, let's turn to that failed IS team project or any botched shared assignment. Say you participated and did your darndest, but you strongly convinced that the poor results were not your fault. Is it okay to make valid excuses and pass the blame to where you know it is deserved, or is that not something you should do?
Well, I don't think it's ever right to make excuses because, you know, again, when you're working as a team, then that team becomes one.
Yeah.
And so if you've delivered something to a customer, whether it's a service or a product, and that product or service is not up to par or the customer is not satisfied, then it becomes a we. You have to apologize for the team, not just, you can't back out and say, well, I didn't have anything to do with this particular part of it.
No, that doesn't impress anybody.
Yes, absolutely. So you have to, you know, you have to look at it from a team standpoint, from a we standpoint, and say that we apologize that, you know, the product or the service was not to your satisfaction, and we will certainly do whatever we can to fix that problem for you.
Well, what do you do if you're a participant on a team, but you're not the task force leader? How do you get the project back on track if you don't really have any authority over the others on the team?
Well, I think if you communicate, and communication is important in any case or any project at all times, really. But I think if you communicate with the team lead, and maybe it's something that they are not aware of. So I would say first, maybe bring it to the attention of the team leader and see if it's something that they're aware of. If they're not, then that's an opportunity to inform them about what's happening and how it can potentially be fixed. And then if they are already aware of it and they've made up their mind as to how they're going to handle it, then there's not really, as an employee, there's not much you can do about it because you're not the team lead.
But I assume if you're the team leader, it's probably a good time before you make public the mistakes or how you're behind or, pass the blame or anything, you have what we call in the NFL a players-only meeting where you just the team members get together and talk about work, iron things out and responsibilities out before you go to the boss or go to the customer and
absolutely. Yes, absolutely. It's always important to communicate, have an open dialogue about potential problems and or existing problems and how you're going to work through those problems or fix them long before they occur. And you know, that is something that I've always done and as an employee is that when I years ago when I used to work for an individual for a company, there were times when I would actually search for potential problems that could possibly occur that could reduce the productivity of the customer. And so then I would go to the customer and I would say to them, well, I see something here that might cause you some issues down the road. Now, here's how you can fix these problems or how you can avoid them. Yeah. And so that I think that's very important that, you know, as a team leader, that you really look at how you can improve the customer's experience, whether it's, you know, you're providing them a service or you're providing them with an end product. But you need to look at how can you always think about how can you improve that their experience. And and one of the main good ways of doing that is to look at, you know, potential problems that can occur or if it's a product, for example, tell them maybe they're not aware of some ways of how they can use that product to improve their lives or some other thing that's going on in their lives or how they're using that product. Look at how they're using it and maybe there's something there that maybe they're missing or they haven't thought of and then say, you know what, here's an idea. Maybe you can use this product to do such and such.
Yeah.
So it's always about improving the customer's experience.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I assume it's possible then with a proper response following a significant personal screw-up that you actually could benefit your career if you handle the recovery in a proper manner.
Yes, you can. I mean, because it follows you. I mean, your reputation follows you, and it's very important that you always. I mean, no one is perfect, and we all make mistakes. You know, usually when we make mistakes, of course, they're not mistakes that we mean to make. And so, I think it's important that you always follow up with not only an apology, but you try to fix the problem.
Yeah.
Some problems, you cannot fix them, but if you can, then I think it really behooves you to try to fix it so
yeah.
that it can show that you care.
It's so great if you go to your boss and say, you know, we screwed up, and or I screwed up, or we screwed up and did thus and so, and this is how we intend to correct it, or this is the actions we intend to take to solve the problem. Then it's so much more encouraging to the boss or to whoever, the customer, if you have that kind of an explanation rather than just saying we screwed up and we don't know what to do.
Absolutely, and customers realize, too, that, you know, sometimes things do happen, and their customers are certainly willing to give you a second and even sometimes a third or fourth chance if you let them know that you are doing your best and that, you know, you are handling the situation and that you will try to keep it from occurring again.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to talk about New Year's recovery from general career dissatisfaction. Say you were passed over for that promotion you craved, and you know you were the best qualified candidate, but someone else got the job, or your boss informs you that you're a valuable contributor, but you pretty much plateaued out and you shouldn't expect any more promotions, at least in the intermediate future. There's nothing really for you to go. You hit the plateau. Or worse yet, your boss advises that your performance is subpar and you have 6 months to improve or else. At mid-career, if you're less than satisfied or you feel trapped within your present job, how best can you get back on track in the new year?
Well, I used to say that I used to have a saying where sometimes, you know, if in order to move up, you have to move out.
Yeah.
And I think that holds true today. Sometimes you are stuck in your position, and there you've sort of hit the ceiling, and
yeah.
so there's no way for you to move up, and that's
yeah.
when it's time to move out.
Yeah.
And so if you're looking for a promotion and you can't find that promotion within your current office or within your company, then it's time to really, you know, reevaluate your skills and your talents and find out, you know, start researching and looking where you can go so that you can utilize those talents and skills that you do have.
Yeah, but it's so important to identify those talents and skills and really have a strategic internal plan of where you want to go before you just start, you know, following the one ads or going on the internet and looking at the job openings.
Absolutely. I mean, it's important because, I mean, you're talking about your career and you're talking about your livelihood, so you want to make sure that you're going to find a position that is pleasing to you and that you're going to enjoy doing, because if you enjoy your work, then it really doesn't seem like work.
No, and it carries over to your whole life. If you enjoy your work, the rest of life seems good, and if you don't, the rest of life can be a struggle. I know that from personal.
Absolutely, and it oftentimes causes unnecessary stress.
Yeah, well, you've written two new books for present and budding entrepreneurs. And say I want to be my own boss, can you offer one or two nuggets of advice that I should consider before I take the plunge? How can I know if I'm well suited to be to run my own business, and where do I start to consider that?
Well, I think one of the important things you need to do if you're thinking about becoming your own boss is really looking at your skills. What
yeah.
skills do you have that you can turn into a business, because
yeah.
I don't think most people don't want to have to learn a new skill in order to start a business.
No,
and I believe that everyone has a skill, a current skill that they can use, and they can turn that into a business. But you have to determine what skills you have and what do you like doing most that you can turn into a business and solve problems for people. That is the most important thing in being business, is solving a problem. And
yeah,
that's how you become successful. And so I think it's important to identify your skills, but you also have to love being on your own, because it's completely different than working for someone else. When
yeah,
you're working for
you
someone, they tell you
structure.
What to do. When you're
yeah.
in for yourself, there's no one to tell you what to do.
That's exactly right. You have to set your own structure, and if it's a nice day, you have to avoid the temptation going out and playing golf. For a jog rather than getting down to business and getting work done. Well, tell us about your two new books, Welcome to the Top and Start Your Business Right, A Comprehensive Guide to Entrepreneurship Success. I know there's both books were written in 2013. How are they different, and how are they alike, and which one should I read first?
Absolutely, and thank you. Yes, I actually published both of them at the same time. Welcome to the Top is for seasoned business owners as well as brand new business owners or individuals who are thinking of starting a business, because it is a book that really provides powerful insights into how successful people, you know, CEOs, successful entrepreneurs, political leaders, celebrities, so many different people from different backgrounds, how they overcame their challenges and how they basically achieved success along the way. And it really gives people, it's sort of a mentor. I like to call the book a mentor because it allows
some real heavyweight contributors in there that have been very successful in their companies and their careers and other activities.
Yes. Absolutely, and it really allows the reader to see how to really learn the methods that these successful people have applied in their lives, and how they, some of them, you know, went from nothing to becoming millionaires. And so it really inspires individuals to learn how a business, how you go about starting a business, and how you overcome challenges, and how you learn how to apply specific methods that other people have applied so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel. That's one of the things that I like to really talk to people about, is don't reinvent the wheel. Anything that you try to do today pretty much has already been done.
Yeah,
so if you can understand how to find a successful method of accomplishing what it is that you want to do, that saves you two precious resources that you really cannot afford to waste, and that is your time and your money. That's what Welcome to the Top does.
Yeah.
It allows you to get all of that information to learn from other people.
And then Start Your Business Right is more of a nuts and bolts type book, is it?
Yes, it is.
Somebody that's actually made a decision to go into business for themselves?
Absolutely. It's a book. It really is a blueprint. I like to call it a blueprint for success because it allows the individual who is thinking about going into business, it allows them to truly understand what they need to be thinking about, what they need to look at, or what they should be considering before starting a business. And it also provides them with over 150 points, you know, questions and really information that they need to begin thinking about and applying and actually planning, because it's very important to create a plan. And so with Start Your Business Right, they can actually create a plan for their business as well as their lives so that they can develop a solid foundation moving forward.
Yeah.
And what I've learned in working with and talking to so many business owners is that they don't have a plan. And so, therefore, they're missing out on a lot because they don't have a written plan. And so that's what Start Your Business Right can do for you. And plus, again, it allows you to think about how you can align your business, your life and your business with your personal life, because we still have a personal life even though we may be in business.
Yeah, you know, if you're going on a trip and you don't know, if you've never been to the location before and you don't know precisely how to get there, you certainly don't start out the trip without either a map or a GPS. And the same should be true of, if you're starting a business or going out on your own doing something new, you've got to have that map in mind. And that's what that personal business plan and strategic plan for your life is all about, I would think.
Yes, it absolutely is. I mean, a business plan, and I think a lot of people don't do business plans because they think it's such dull work, and it's something that they just don't like to do because they think it's so involved. But a business plan can be very simple. If you're looking to get funding for your business, it may be a little bit more involved, but a business plan can be very, very simple. It doesn't have to be a 50 or 100 page document, and that's what I try to get, you know, small business owners to understand, is that you still need a plan. Even if you don't go ask for money, you still need a plan to use as a guide so that you know where you're going and how to go from point A to point B.
Yeah, you have to have a key concept of supplying something that there's a need for and that you're able to supply. And, when that basic concept has got to be the core of the plan, or you're not going to get anywhere else.
Absolutely.
Well,
how are you going to know if you've achieved success if you don't have a plan to know what you have defined as success?
That's exactly right. You have a website where you can preview the two books. What's that website? I think I
Yes, it is secretstosuccessbooks.com.
Yeah, that's all one word. It's secretstosuccessbooks.com. And if someone wants to subscribe to your magazine, Exceptional People, what's the website for that?
Yes, that is exceptionalmag.com.
Okay. Mag is a as opposed to nag.
Yes. Absolutely. That's M-A-G.
Well, yeah, that's and that's certainly a high-powered magazine that you might want to preview and look at. And, you know, the year 2013 may have been tough, a tough one for your career. I know it is, and some of us are bound to face career setbacks in 2014. And if this has or will happen to you, I trust you'll take Monica's sage advice and astutely turn that setback around to your advantage. And whether opportunities arise or setbacks occur, you must always remain, and this is what she's saying as well, you must remain CEO of you, because no one else has as much at stake as you do in your career. And thank you so much, Monica, for joining us, and the best of success in your two new books and in your magazine and all your other ventures.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for us, too. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.